Good morning, everyone, and welcome to I Take Bravo Very Seriously with your host, Dana. I'm excited to be here today because we have a lot of great news. We've got a lot on the docket. Literally, moment by moment, I feel like there's more news that I'm adding, so there's quite a bit today. Plus, we had some pretty great episodes of Vanderpump Rules, Summer House, The Valley, which I'm really into. I'm going to cover Rachel Goes Rogue. She went rogue a couple of times this week, so there's quite a bit to get into, so we might as well just get to it, right? Because it's gonna be a long episode, so let's get into the episode.
And that's why is it about
the damn pasta? Get over the damn pasta, read between the f***ing lines. It ain't about the pasta. It's not about the pasta. It's not about the pasta.
Okay, let's get into news of the week because there is quite a bit of news. So, I don't know if we predicted this or not, but Marcus and Larsa have broken up again. Apparently she said it was something to do with them not being aligned with their goals and they're on different life paths. Or maybe Michael Jordan was gonna kick him out of the will, who knows? But again, like last time, I'm not gonna miss them, I'm not gonna miss separation anxiety. And I'm pretty much fine with this. I also heard that she might have been filming for House of Villain season 2, which is right up her alley, and it's sort of weird when she brings her boyfriends to these competition shows, so get it, Larsa. All right, I've also heard that, and I don't know if this is true, but this would be amazing, Eileen Davidson is possibly being rumored to come back to Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Like, would you guys be into that? I would actually love it. I think it would be awesome with her and Lisa Rinna, obviously. You beast! I mean, these are classic, classic Real Housewives lines. I mean, I think I'd be into it. I think I'd be into it. Unfortunately, I say that, lol. Fortunately, we are losing Anne Marie Wiley, but that's actually not the news of the week that she's leaving Real Housewives. The news is that she's surprised. So I'm gonna read her statement here from Instagram. So she says, "I got word today I will not be returning to the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. To say that I'm disappointed is an understatement. I never auditioned for this show. The show found me and asked me to be on it out of the blue 6 weeks after the cast had already started filming. I was thrown into filming 2 weeks later mid-season. I was very excited about the opportunity, and I thought following exactly what I was instructed to do throughout filming last season was the way the game was played. Listening to what I was instructed to do was my rookie mistake. What I'm disappointed about is that the fans never got to see the real me or even a glimpse of my unique life story. Contrary to what was shown on TV, I'm not obsessed with the esophagus, lol. What I am is a woman, a proud black woman who is truly obsessed with a wonderful, strong black man, who is truly blessed with a wonderful, strong black man as my husband, who lifts me and our four wonderful children up with so much love and positivity on a daily. It was an important mission of mine for the next season to show a solid black family unit and that true black love exists, even in Beverly Hills. My struggle with losing my mother to lung cancer within weeks of taping and my struggle with adoption trauma and what was going to be and still will be a new life journey for me to finding my biological parents, all of which was taped but never shown last season, among other things. To the fans that saw past what was portrayed and saw the real me, thank you so much for the love and support. I wish all the ladies good luck on the next season, and thank you, Bravo, for the opportunity. As an athlete, challenges only make you stronger and more determined to prosper. I'm excited for the new opportunities ahead that celebrate positivity, truth, authenticity, and the values I truly align with. Until we meet again, thank you, Anna Marie." So, okay. Bye, girl. So next in the news, John Jansen is suing Shannon Bedore for $75,000 she allegedly borrowed for a facelift. Now, I think this is all going to be part of filming because they're currently filming right now, and I think this dirty man just wants to be on TV. Why would she be borrowing money from her boyfriend for a facelift? I feel like that would be a gift, or that is what she's arguing anyways. So that's sort of what she's come back with legally, that, you know, it was a gift, and I guess he'll have to prove if there's some sort of documentation where there was an agreement that she would pay him back. I really don't know, but this man is awful. Like, she's been through enough. Now you're, like, dating someone she knows from the show as well. Like, go away, John Jansen. Buying Beverly Hills. I don't know if you guys ended up catching it over last weekend. I did binge it. I didn't love it, to be honest. I normally really, really love home renovation shows. I love, like, Million Dollar Listing and all those shows. I don't know what it was. I just couldn't really get into I don't know, the listings or the characters. I just couldn't really get into it. But we obviously did get a lot more revelations about, you know, the Umansky family than we did from The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which is obviously a statement everyone is saying. I'm not making a new statement here. But I guess just to summarize, Mauricio's basically like, okay, yeah, like Kyle has completely changed her life around. She's really into working out and staying healthy and not drinking. And she wants to go to bed early. And I still want to live sort of this partying lifestyle. And it's sort of part of my work. And I want to stay out late. And I'm not willing to give that up. So that was a very... That shows me he really has a good understanding of what is wrong in their relationship. So I was sort of impressed by that, because the vibe we got on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills was that, or the look you would always sort of see in his face was that he had no idea what was going on. Obviously, there's more than that. There's obviously more than that, but that was interesting to see. But I was also sort of fascinated by the fact that he's not willing to give up that lifestyle. I mean, they're constantly talking about this next stage of their lives, this empty nest or whatever, yet he doesn't seem to be willing to move into that stage. Like, it's awesome you're building like 4 bajillion agencies all over the world, but, you know, aren't you in that stage where now you're going to stay home with your wife and settle down, and that's what she wants, and you say you want her and you want to fight for her and you want all that, because he was saying that in the series, but you're not willing to give up staying out late and that partying type of lifestyle? Like, really? For your marriage? I just find that quite odd. So there was that, and then he also made like these weird sort of sad statements where he would say like he would try to kiss her and she would sort of turn away, so he could see that maybe she's not in love with him anymore. That was sort of heartbreaking. And then there was a scene with him and the 4 daughters, and he's sort of explaining again that they're separated, and it just feels like another scene like we saw in The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, where they're sort of sitting down their kids and explaining it. And it's like, these girls have now been put through like a couple of these scenes where they have had to have their parents break down what's going on. But what's sort of interesting in this is sort of how you see the kids sort of coming at it more from an adult perspective than Mauricio is, because you have one of the kids saying like, so you guys really haven't communicated at all about what's wrong, or you guys haven't really talked about this or that. And there was even like another point where Mauricio's talking to, I don't know, someone, some real estate guy, and the real estate guy is like, so what's going on with Kyle and Morgan Wade? And Mauricio's like, you know, I have never really asked her. You've never really asked her? Like, the whole world wants to know and you've never really asked her? Like, he's so disconnected from his marriage, he so doesn't seem to know how to communicate, which is wild, given how long their marriage was, and it almost just seems like he doesn't know her at all and doesn't know how to connect with her at all. It's, I don't know. I mean, it's obviously worth watching if you're trying to get more about, like, into the Umanskys and the Hiltons and you're really into all of that, but it was sad. It was disappointing. I don't know. Worth a watch, worth a weekend, I guess. What else was in the news? So Lala has sort of been all over the place. Lala Kent, Vanderpump Rules. She's just kind of been making sort of like a press circuit of just, you know, talking crap. And it seems like, obviously, as I mentioned last week, something happened between her and Ariana at the last reunion, and she's just been sort of coming in hot ever since. She said on her stories that she's sure she'll be friends with Katie again. If she goes back to being miserable, they'll be real thick again. And then she said, contemplated not posting this because I love her mom. Sorry, Tare. So that's weird. Katie did sort of speak about it, just saying that she's not really sure what the beef is that her and Lala have and why Lala is sort of saying these things on her stories and bringing her mom into it. She mentioned that today on Disrespectfully. She said, yeah, the reunion didn't go well, but she doesn't really know why Lala is like taking it to this extreme. And like I said, Lala is also implied on many other podcasts, including Jeff Lewis, that her and Ariana aren't good. So, but again, the way she's taking it is this very, she doesn't seem sad about it. You know, she seems like, you know, I've made my peace and I'm, but it's not even I've made my peace. She seems very, actually more so aggressive and angry about the whole thing. And just very like, I'm here to burn the whole world down, as opposed to just, I'm going to make my peace and move on. So I don't know. I don't know what she's doing. I'm just confused, because it's like, some of these people, maybe not Ariana, but Katie and you were very close for a really long time. And are you willing to let it go this way, you know? And if you think about last episode of Vanderpump Rules, where Katie and Ariana had that sit, or sorry, Katie and Lala had that sit down dinner and tried to make up, and Lala says, like, I just don't want to get to a place where we can't come back from. And I feel like that's this, you know? Next we have a super weird incident this past week with, the Valley premiere. So Jeremy Maddox was there and he, was approached by Craig from the Pump Rules podcast. And I'm going to play a clip for you guys now, basically from that podcast.
Are you enjoying a laugh at Tom Sandoval, or was I mistaken?
My lawyers always told me to shut the fuck up.
But maybe it was an optical illusion I saw. I don't know.
I think, yeah, you might be hallucinating.
I could be. Look, it's not the first thing.
You might be hallucinating, but we can find out is the world hallucinating on season 12. The story is to be told. I need to talk to Tom. I would love to talk to my sister, but I haven't heard from her in months, so.
The perils of Broadway.
We'll just keep Broadway. On keeping on, yeah, dude, yeah. And we'll deal with the punches as they come in. For now, I'll plead the fifth. You may or may not have seen some things.
Okay, I'll go with that. I'll take that. So yeah. That's the official word, folks.
That's the official word.
That is the hard stance of Jeremy Maddox.
And depending on how long it takes for me to hear from my sister, will determine on whether I stick to that stance or not.
I understand.
Water under the bridge, man.
Well, that's the best way to live life, I suppose.
Obviously, me and him need to have a conversation.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are left unsaid that I never got to say. People need to realize that I lived with both of them for a long time, so it affected me too.
Yeah.
I lost a friend. I lost someone that was a mutual relationship of love.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm always going to stand by my sister.
Okay, so super weird. He drops the bomb that him and Ariana haven't spoken in months. Not clear as to why. I'm curious if it has anything to do with the fact that he's saying here that he wants to talk to Sandoval. So that was a weird bomb to drop. Then he's like hugging Sandoval at this event, making jokes about it. And then it sounds like he's also sort of threatening Ariana, where he says, like, depending on how long it takes me to hear back from my sister will depend on, like, how I move forward with Tom, which is, are you blackmailing your sister? Like, it's just a very bizarre situation she seems to be have going on with her brother. I mean, it was one thing when there's other people, like, I get it that, like, you know, he lived, they lived together and that he had a relationship with Tom as well, but there were people who were friends with him who are now becoming friends with him again. That's one thing. Your family, that's your blood. Like, she should not have to worry about her family members going back and trying to befriend him again. That is where the line should definitely be drawn. So I cannot believe that this is even a situation. So I'm very curious to see where this will go. But in other Maddox family news, Ariana Maddox buys a $1.6 million home in the Hollywood Hills. It's really, really cool, and it was actually sold to her by Ben Black from the Buying Beverly Hills. So love that crossover for Netflix and Bravo. And it's really, really cool, and I actually heard today on Brav Bros, so I'll give them the credit for that because they heard it from someone. They said from a credible source that basically the whole home situation with Ariana is that she has actually been trying to buy another home for the past 8 months. It's just that the market is bad and her offers were not accepted. And this was the first offer that was accepted. So apparently that's what's been going on with the house. Good for her. Good for her, man. And I'm happy she's getting out of that hellhole from him. Real Housewives of Miami, season 7 filming apparently is delayed until fall 2024. And there's apparently casting changes coming with at least 2 changes. I hope that it only means additions, if anything, because they really do have such a stellar cast, you know, even with their 3 friends of. They have such a good thing going for the past couple of seasons. You know, you really want to be careful with these huge shakeups, but, you know, no one listens to me. In Real Housewives of Potomac news, Candace Dillard Bassett is out. 6 years, she thanks Bravo for the opportunity and says it's not, you know, forever, it's see you later. And then there's this not blind item, but from the Jasmine brand saying that Robin Dixon is apparently out too, but that one isn't like officially confirmed because I don't really know what the Jasmine brand is, which is interesting that we would lose Candace and Robin, because Candace, it was like, okay, you know, of course I'm gonna miss the cry angle, but at this point where she's not friends with anyone in the cast, it's sort of, we knew this was going to happen. I've been talking about this, you know, when I was covering Potomac before it just became too painful to do. But, you know, if Candace leaves, that does leave more opportunity for Robin. And so it's just weird for Robin to leave, because if Robin leaves, then Candace can sort of stay because Robin and Candace had beef. So I don't really know what's going on here. Obviously, we know that regardless, there has to be some major changes because this show is such a flop this year when it has been so, so, so good in seasons past. It's been one of my favorites of all time. I mean, it was probably my favorite until... I'd say it probably was my favorite up until this season, you know? And I think we can get back there, and hopefully we can get back there. I don't know if it's just casting, but, you know, it's been a rough season. It's been a rough watch. Until the final episode, actually, which I'm not even going to cover today because I'm not covering Real Housewives of Potomac anymore. But, you know, I would just say go ahead and watch the final episode, because a big fight broke out, a whole bunch of stuff between Mia and Gordon, and it was pretty good. And last piece of news is that Simon Guabadia and Portia Williams, who, as I told you, Real Housewives of Atlanta, are separated. Simon is claiming that Portia brought a gunman to the home and that police were called. So I'm just going to read you this here. So Simon Guabadia fired back at estranged wife Portia Williams' divorce filing, claiming in new court documents that the Real Housewives of Atlanta star brought an unarmed gunman to their marital home. In the documents obtained by Page Six Monday, Guabadia alleges that reality star abandoned their house at one point, only to return with a man visibly bearing a gun for reasons unknown to Guabadia. The entrepreneur claims that Williams brought the man on two occasions. Guabadia alleges that during one instance, which took place on March 21st, he had to call the police to maintain the peace. He also claims that Williams, 42, had third parties to call and harass Guabadia and others in an effort to force them out. Guabadia alleges that on or around March 24th, Williams, her mother, and her mother's boyfriend made a forcible entry into the marital home, disengaged security cameras, and tampered with items and evidence. Since the filing of the instant divorce, wife's actions have been erratic, unstable, threatening, and harassing to house staff and the minor's children, the documents state. Williams' behavior has caused safety concerns, especially since there are minor children, Guabadia's children currently living in the marital residence. Guabadia, 59, is requesting a judge issue a restraining order against the Bravo celebrity. Reps and attorneys for Williams did not immediately return Page Six's request for comments. Page Six also has reached out to the police departments to confirm Guabadia's allegations. So that's crazy. I love, obviously, that we're getting Portia back to Real Housewives of Atlanta for next season. I don't think the cameras are up yet, so I think we're missing all of this, but, you know, this is the juice we need. Oh, one other piece of news I forgot about. I don't know if anyone watches Selling Sunset, but there's some crazy news going on right now with Christine Quinn. So her husband, what's his name again? Chris, I think. I think his name is Chris. He threw a bag of glass at her and her child, apparently, and then he was arrested. Then he tried to come back the next day, was arrested again. Then he filed a restraining order against her, and that restraining order was not, what do you call it, like, put in place by the judge because there wasn't really grounds to do so. This is really sad. I hope she can get out of this situation safely, because that's wild. I remember their amazing, gorgeous wedding, and she wore this insanely gorgeous black wedding dress, and she seems so in love. I mean, we didn't really get to know him much on the show, but oh, this is just a really, really sad story. All right, well, anyways, that's it for News of the Week.
He's a f***ing battered wife! Look at him!
Okay, so as I mentioned, Rachel went rogue a couple of times this week. The first time, she just decided she wanted the world to know who knew about the affair, and then she just started dropping names. So she goes, Tom Schwartz, which we all know, he knew from the beginning. Kyle Chan, which we all already know as well, and she mentions how the finale party filmed for him and no one seems to have a problem with him or him knowing about the affair. She says Jason Bader, the band manager, that is obvious. Max Boyens is a new one to us. She said she's not sure, but she says that he was one of the people that they would meet up with regularly at this dive bar behind Sandoval's house, so she wasn't sure the extent of what he knew. Okay. Then she says Logan Cochran, who we all know is Ariana's best friend, and then she tells a story where she says one night at Tom's house, they were staring at each other and, like, cuddling in what is called the social media room at Tom and Ariana's house. And Logan walked in and he was like, oh, okay, I'm sorry, I'm really messed up, okay, bye. And he's Ariana's best friend. So she feels like he must know, because why would they be cuddling? That was her argument. Then she said Brad Kearns, who's also Ariana's best friend. She said that Logan is close with Brad. She said she doesn't think Brad knew the extent of it, but as it was coming out, it was easy to piece these things together. So I just want to go back over these three for a second here, because really she hasn't given us any new information. She's told us Tom, Kyle, and Jason. We knew about that. Max Boyens, you're saying you have a suspicion. Logan, you're not really saying he knew either. And Brad, you're just saying he was close with Logan and would start to notice things as things were coming out. Everyone started to notice things as things were coming out. Once it was coming out, it was out. So, you know, I've tried to be supportive of her, or, well, you guys know that I've kind of come into this well with, I'm gonna listen and I'm gonna take the information as I take it, right? So, you know, I had initially come into this podcast with the full intent of completely bashing her, and then I totally saw so much of her side of the story and, you know, sympathized with her quite a bit. And now, just the vibe that she's giving me, it's starting to feel a bit cocky and arrogant and not as, sorry, I guess. Not that she needs to continue to be sorry for the rest of her life, but, you know, it's just giving off an air that it's just sort of weird. And it's, I don't want to say it's dangerous, but it's not good just to name people or to try to name drop people when you actually don't know that those people knew. You're just sort of making speculations again, right? So there wasn't really a point to this. And then she said Tom's mom, which is obvious. She went to St. Louis and she said that Tom treated her like a girlfriend there, and that Tom's mom said that Ariane hasn't come to St. Louis in years, which again is just like another example of like how screwed up this relationship was. And I don't know. Then she starts talking about the Valley. She thinks it'll be a mess. She thinks that Vanderpump Rules last week was boring. She said the audacity of Sandoval to have those girls over in the pool party. And then she said that she realized that she was that girl. She said she thinks it's funny that he's acting like he's dating and that this is a new muscle he needs to flex. But we all knew that he was seeing girls when she was in the Meadows. Then she says something interesting. So when, yeah, like I've mentioned this many times, you know, when he was off touring with his band and she was in the Meadows right after Scandaval, we saw him with many different women and, you know, trying to catch him in the act. And now she's saying that she gave him the green light to date other people. She said she wanted him to get his needs met, and she actually hoped that she would have more space because he was suffocating her with his demands for attention. That's interesting. You know, because she was sort of, I guess, giving off the vibe that, you know, he was cheating on her. Not necessarily. I mean, like, she had said on Bethany's podcast, like, he had been seen over the summer with, like, a myriad of different girls. And I do believe that she said, even on her podcast, that when he had been seen over the summer with so many different girls, she did have to speak with him about that. So, you know, I'm curious as to what that was, but I'm surprised that, you know, that was all legit. That's just sort of really interesting. So she's saying that it just shows that he wasn't saving himself for her. She says, and then she sort of did this whole never have I ever, because that's what they did in the Vanderpump episode. She said she was upset about that because of the card about the dog, which I totally get. And if that card was not legitimately there and Allie had read that and it was fake, I would totally be upset too. I totally get it. But then she just sort of does this never have I ever based on like the show and like every cast member. And I'm sorry, it was sort of cringy. And the fact that she has spent time writing it and it was about the rest of the cast based on what they've done, like never have I ever gotten my ass tattooed, things like that. So I don't know, like I said, this just came off sort of cocky and it just wasn't my favorite episode of hers. She also said that she saw a headline from Us Weekly where Jax Taylor said she hopes, or that he hopes that she gets a real job and hopes that she stays away from the Valley. She says, like, they're really trying to push to have the Valley and her name in the same sentence. I don't know about that. She said that she isn't going on the Valley. Girl, you weren't invited. Radar Online, she says, posted a video of James getting kicked out of the Canyon Club last year where he was allegedly aggressive with Allie. I actually didn't end up reposting this. A lot of people had sent it to me. To me, I just didn't really see anything. You guys know I'm not pro James whatsoever, but I just didn't feel like there was enough to post. You couldn't really see what was happening, so I just didn't feel like there was enough there. She said that it wasn't too long ago that people were talking about the James allegations, and now for the past couple of weeks, it's been radio silent. Honestly, in my opinion, that was because of her lawsuit. I feel like we were almost there, and Kristen was just about to release an episode, or it seemed like she was about to tell her story about James. And then Rachel drops this lawsuit, and it takes everybody by storm, and it takes the media by storm, and everybody was focused on it. And then it felt like the James thing went away. And I'm not blaming her. She can make whatever lawsuits she wants. But honestly, in my opinion, that's why the James stuff went away. She said that Katie had posted a tweet about Joe wanting to light her on fire with Rachel. She said she doesn't know why Katie wants to keep inciting violence, and if this were any other workplace, she would be fired. I do want to mention that Dana and Katie did bring that up today on disrespectfully and said that this isn't a regular workplace and that Rachel needs to learn to stop taking things so literally, which is true. It is something I've been thinking about recently and something I've been talking with some other content creators about. Like, obviously, when Katie says, "I'm going to light you on fire," she doesn't mean that literally. It's just a saying. So I do appreciate that. She does go on to say that Joe is a lovely girl, and she says that Tom didn't love her as much as he's trying to convince the audience he did. And he didn't. That's what the journaling is about and the not drinking is about. She continues to maintain that he did not want her to get mental health treatment and wanted to keep her under his control. And then when he's showing Schwartz photos of them, like we see in the episode last week, Tom says that he'll never have this again. So was he, and she's saying, like, so was he in love with the idea of being in a relationship and not necessarily her? She also said that she doesn't like that Sandoval is saying that she hooked up with Schwartz, which is in that part of the episode when Jax comes in for that dinner at Tom Tom, basically something about Katie, and he says something like, oh, like the two girls that you've hooked up with since Katie she has a problem with, being Raquel and Joe. And she just wants to clarify again that she did not hook up with Schwartz just because it was one kiss on camera. So once she made those claims about other people knowing about the affair, obviously there was a lot of responses. So the first one comes from Logan Cochran. So this is what he posted. So Rachel suggested I knew about the affair on her podcast today. First, ew, no, I did not know. Second, I don't believe in lying to my friends or withholding important information from them. I believe they should know. Maybe that works for some others, but not me. My friendship with Ariana is very near and dear to me, and I will protect it at all costs. I share everything with her, the good, the bad, and yes, even what Rachel mentioned on her podcast today. That said, my perspective at the time was not that these two people were up to anything nefarious. The incident Rachel recounted today was such a non-event to me at the time, not because I knew or was complicit, come on y'all, they invited me into their weird little cuddle puddle after I walked in the room, but because I wasn't close at the time with the people casting doubt and making others question everything. I just thought we were all good friends. I learned the same day Ariana did. Now please go rogue somewhere else. Okay. But when she did describe that event, I mean, It is starting to get hard to believe that people were just like, oh no, that's normal, or no, we're all just like that. Yet I continue to keep hearing that, and I'm just confused. Like, these people are like almost 40, and they're just like all cuddling together and hugging each other and gazing into each other's eyes and being lovey-dovey all the time. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like, why are none of these incidences caught on camera so that, like, we as the audience can judge? Because I feel like every episode, Rachel is giving us another scenario where we're just like, that's weird. I don't know. And Logan's explanation being that when he walked in, it was because he wasn't close with the people at the time who were casting doubt. But you just saw it with your own eyes, right? Like, you don't have to be close with the people who are casting doubt to make your own decision. And then Max Boyens responded. So he said, This girl, I just can't shut up and take accountability. Also, we're still talking about this? What the fuck? Really curious what her platform will be once she's beat this into the fucking ground. I'm so bored. Now you'll notice he didn't actually deny it. I truly actually do believe Max knew. I mean, Tom was telling people Max was close with him. I don't see why not, right? I mean, it wasn't like Tom was keeping this that much of a secret from that many people. It was mostly just Ariana. So I don't think it's crazy that Max knew. I just, again, don't think she should be like accusing people without like literally any proof. And then Katie and Dana talked about this a little bit more on Disrespectfully. So I'm going to play that for you guys now.
Logan told me she said that they weren't under a blanket, whatever. Long story short, they were all hanging out as one does, and they'd always, you know, hang out late at their house. And he walked in to go to the bathroom, and Raquel and Tom were under a blanket.
In their social media room, not in the bathroom.
In a social media room, not in the bathroom. That wasn't weird. Like, at the time, now with 2020 vision and more context it is, but they literally like, oh, come lay with us and whatever. And he was just like going to the bathroom and didn't think anything of it. She is trying to make it out that they were full on hooking up, Logan saw, and looked the other way. That is not what happened.
The thing I don't like is that she's basically going down like a list of people like, this person definitely 100% knew. This person definitely 100% knew. This person like probably knew because of like proximity and just like being around. And then this person, like, they saw something that probably like maybe looked like, it's just like, ma'am, unless they like knew 100%, because what you all were doing was lying, hiding, deceiving, and anyone that called you out on any kind of like weirdness, you guys were like shaming and vehemently denying. Like,
okay, so that's their take on it. Then Rachel went rogue again on Monday. This episode was with Dr. Pia from Married at First Sight about forgiveness, so I won't recap the episode because, again, I don't really want to do the therapy episodes, but it just in terms of the Vanderpump stuff. Rachel said that when she confronted Tom about recording her without her consent, he actually tried to convince her to fire her lawyer and hire his lawyer and said, the last thing we need is for you to do is to go rogue. So that's actually where she got the name for the podcast. She said that she has forgiven herself. She is struggling with mutual friends who are so close with him, but understands that everyone has to make their own choices. So this is interesting because this is basically what Ariana's going through, right? Because now she doesn't want to have mutual friends with him. I believe she's talking about Brett Kenyon. So I've mentioned him to you guys before. Brett Kenyon is that guy in like the second episode where Tom has that birthday party and he goes up to James Kennedy and he's like, oh, Katie is trying to oust me from the friend group. That's Brett Kenyon. He is definitely still friends with Tom, obviously. We've seen that. I believe he works for Vanderpump Dogs, and I believe he works at TomTom, and I do have knowledge that he is currently friends with Rachel, so that could definitely be who she's talking about. She said that she decided to stop communication with Sandoval and block him when she left treatment. She wasn't specific for how he wronged her in the Bethany interview, but now she wants to be more open with it, and she said it's been a process for her to come out with it. So I think when she's saying that, she's sort of explaining maybe to the public who were just sort of like, but, you know, why didn't you say more then, or why is it taking you so long? I think she's just sort of saying, you know, it's been a process. So that's it on Rachel Goes Rogue.
How many sandwiches have you made for me?
All right, so let's get into Summer House from last week. So Lindsay had left the premises, as we recall. And then we have a scene of Carl talking to his mom and stepdad on the phone. He says he gets down and sad because he tries to communicate how he's feeling without making Lindsay upset. Lindsay comes back and says that she was just walking along the side of the road. Carl tells the camera that he loves Lindsay and he doesn't want to focus on fighting and he just wants to have one fun night. And I will remind you guys again, as I remind you in every single episode, that this is a weekly occurrence, right? This is not good. This has literally been happening for every episode. So the gang decide to have a camping night in the backyard. Fun, not something I'd be into. Definitely want my warm bed, but sure. Sounds cool. Gabby tells Lindsay that the energy she and Carl are putting out is palpable. I just love that Gabby really gives it to Lindsay like it is. Like, she's very, very truthful and she doesn't sugarcoat things. And I think that really Lindsay needs a friend like that. And I really appreciate that in Gabby. Lindsay tells the camera that couples fight and it's normal. It's a normal thing that couples do. Okay, girl, not this much and not this close to their wedding and not in front of other people. Like, this is wild that you guys cannot get it together. And then most of the episode is about, like, camping and setting up for the camping. The group play Truth or Dare, Sierra and Wes kiss, and it's super steamy. Wes seems like such a sweetie. Like, he seems really good. Again, like, still haven't gotten to know him. That being said, I feel like he went on a press tour last week. He did so many podcasts, and maybe I should have listened to them, and then I would maybe have maybe a bit more of an opinion on him to give you guys, but I did not listen to them. So here we are. Sorry, I'm just trying to hold my dog right now and get her in a comfortable position because she's really upset that we're podcasting. She really hates it, and now she is tangled in my headphones. All right, lie down, sweetheart. Lie down. She'll figure it out. So, part of Truth or Dare, Kyle and Lindsay end up doing a topless lap around the pool. And there's no shame in either of their game. And Amanda says that her favorite part is that there's no sexual tension between either of them, which is so funny. Jesse ends up going to hook up with a girl he met online, and he tells the cameras that he hopes to find a girl that makes him not want other girls, and maybe he's just not ready to grow up. I forget how old this man is. I forget if he's in his 20s. If he's in his 20s, fine. But if he's in his 30s, no. Sierra said that sharing a tent with Wes is a good first step, and it's appropriate. It's like such a weird situation to try to start a relationship in when you are literally living with the person every weekend, right? Like, they're doing like these first dates in the city, which is totally normal, but then on the weekend they have sleepovers, so it sort of propels everything like in this weird fast direction. But I'm so curious where they are now. I mean, again, I should have just listened to some of the podcasts he's on. Maybe I'll get back to you guys on that. So everyone ends up coming inside because it starts sporadically pouring throughout the night. And then the next day, Amanda's talking to Kyle about wanting to find a place in New Jersey with a backyard. She wants natural light. She wants outdoor space. And she says where they're living right now, she doesn't feel comfortable. She says there are so many things that she craves that you don't get in the city. She says that her parents are dying for kids, and so when they have kids, New Jersey it is. She says they'll be over all the time helping, and she's like, why would, you know, Kyle not want to live near my parents? That seems like a bigger conversation, but it doesn't seem like either of them are ready to leave the city entirely just yet, so it seems like a place in New Jersey for now as a, like, getaway seems like a good compromise, and it seems like they're both on the same page about that. Then we have a scene of Carl and Lindsay in bed, and Lindsay is asking Carl how she ended up running around naked with Kyle. So it's just interesting to me. Like, if Lindsay doesn't remember, this means that her alcohol does affect her, right? Carl said he realized a couple days prior he was starting to feel annoyed and frustrated, and probably because he was tired. And he feels like what he did was he needs to communicate that, and he needs to be able to better communicate with her without it turning into something else. And Lindsay's like, yeah, let's just address this in couples therapy. Like, agreed, but again, like, why are we still here? Like, why are we stuck in this communication vortex that they just can't get out of? Why is it always like this? Like, I just have so many questions. And also, I want to be a fly on the wall in that therapy, right? Like, do you think their therapist needs a therapist, right? I could imagine that woman really needing to drink after this. Like, it's just wild. Then we have a scene of Carl and West and Jesse and Sierra going to work out with cycling. Carl says it really has helped him in recovery and with his conflicts with Lindsay. Afterwards, Carl says that he and Lindsay talked and things were fine last night. And then Jesse asks Carl if she ended up apologizing for accusing him of doing drugs. And Carl says, if she did, I don't recall. That's just so sad, right? And then Sierra said, it's also sad for us to watch her accuse you of breaking your sobriety. She says, from the outside, it feels like it gets to that next level with Lindsay when she's drunk, and it's the same with her dad. So Sierra says that she worries that the situation is not what you want to bring children into, because she said that she had that situation. She said her parents fought all the time, and it was so much, and eventually they divorced because, you know, or for her mom, like, she just couldn't have her kids continue to see this. And Sierra says, like, if this is where you're at right now, you need to realize this is where you're going to be for the rest of your life. And I feel like that was a really telling statement. Like, I don't know what I thought about Sierra prior to this season. Honestly, I've just never really thought about it. And since this is my first podcast, I've never really, you know, tried to formalize it into words or tried to, like, decide on who she is. But voice of reason, I'm going to call her voice of reason. I feel like she has a lot of insight here that we're just maybe not getting from anybody else. No, I think we're getting it from other people, but it's just, I think she's like an old soul, and I think she's amazing. So anyways, Paige and Craig are in the city, and she's talking about how she wants a bigger place, and she decides to include Craig in the decision because, you know, he's there sometimes, but what she says goes. Then we have a scene of West and Jesse going to get their nails done, which is a sentence I never thought I'd say. Wes says that he went on another date with Sierra and they had a full sleepover, and he said that he was laid off a few months ago, but he's kind of stressed and he's trying not to think too far ahead. And then Jesse talks about, like, whether, you know, Craig is gonna not like him and whether Craig's gonna, like, have beef with him. He said he doesn't like drama, but there's potential with that. If Craig is, like, you know, immature, he might start problems with Jesse. So then everyone arrives at the house, and Paige is talking about getting a new apartment, which is what they were doing in the city, talking to a realtor. And Craig said that he would contribute, if it was outside of her budget, he would contribute the part that was outside of her budget. And then Paige says to the whole group and to the camera that she doesn't want that. She says she wouldn't buy a car with Craig if she wasn't without being married to him. She wouldn't start a bank account without being married to him. So why would she take part of her rent from him? She said that, like, what if something happened and what she's supposed to do? Like, hey, you know, your portion is due. So she doesn't want to be indebted to him. She also doesn't want him making decisions in her apartment. So she's like, no, 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 no. And honestly, Paige is just such a true feminist queen. I absolutely love her. I love her independence. I love everything about her. Continue on. No notes. So Kyle and Craig talk about Amanda. Kyle says that Amanda has been helping him with the company from the start. And Craig says that, you know, he's becoming the best version of himself. So if he and Paige don't work out, he's fine with that too. And Kyle says this is the first time that he's ever heard Craig say something like this. He said that, you know, his patience isn't going to last forever because, you know, he says he's got his business in Charleston and she's got her life in New York and, you know, that's not going to last forever and they've got to figure it out. So that was sort of interesting to hear. I mean, we did see on Southern Charm where Craig and Paige had that conversation where he said he made a similar statement, but it was more so where I think it was supposed to be more of an independence thing where it was supposed to be like, I've learned enough where I know now that I would be okay. I wouldn't need you. I'd be okay without you. It was supposed to be more of a thing where he could be independent and be on his own, and which is the place you would need to be in when you're ready to be in a relationship. But this had a little more edge to it, I felt like. I don't know what you guys think. If you noticed that, there just seemed a little more edge or like tension when he said, when he made this statement. So then there's a scene of all the guys in the hot tub, and they're talking about how Carl isn't coming tomorrow, and he's trying to break the cycle of Friday fights. Kyle says that he's heard that Carl and Lindsay are sleeping in separate rooms at home, and then it cuts to the girls getting ready, and Lindsay's putting on a dress, and Lindsay says that Carl isn't a very sexual person, and she says that they have sex, like, once every couple weeks, and Paige is like, what? Like, you have to change that. And Paige is like, you know, we're doing it all the time. Amanda's like, well, don't look at us. We've been together almost 10 years. But like in year two, it was every day. And like, you really saw a look of worry on Lindsay's face. And Lindsay's like, yeah, but he doesn't even initiate. So, I mean, again, every episode, we're getting more and more insight into what's going on in Carl and Lindsay's relationship. It is wildly weird that, you know, about 2 years into the relationship, they're not having sex very often. He's not initiating. They're sleeping in separate rooms. And again, guys, remember, this is like July 18th or something crazy like that. And they're getting married November 14th. Or they don't, obviously. We know now. But just wild where we are, again, in terms of time. And that is it for Summer House.
Summer should be fun. Mena, not fun.
Okay, let's get into Vanderpump Rules. So I actually thought this episode was a bit chaotic, unstructured, confusing. So I'm just going to try to break it down into segments in terms of like themes. I don't know. I'm going to try to do something with it. Okay. So I'm not going to do my usual, even though I'm always like, I don't want to do line by line recaps. And then I end up doing it. And then I say I'm not going to do it. And then I say I'm going to go by themes. And then I end up doing a line by line recap. And this time I swear I'm really going to try not to do a line by line recap. Because I really think that there was just sort of chunks of things that happened that I sort of want to go into. Okay, so the first one was just James picking out Allie's clothes. So even though she says she hates shopping and she says she likes it, it sort of seemed controlling to me. Now, you guys, again, no, I don't like James. I have a feeling that he has controlling tendencies with his girlfriends. We haven't seen it yet in these situations, but, you know, we've just been having feelings about him and Allie, and this just sort of felt like something. Again, even though she says that she likes that he does this, it just feels a little controlling to me. I don't know. You guys let me know. Joe. Okay. I see where Ariana is coming from when it comes to Joe. For Ariana, Joe is a person who was around and knew about the affair, so she feels like Joe is complicit, so that is fair. Sheena is trying to do this thing with Joe where She's trying to bully her in this little way, but I feel like Sheena doesn't actually know how to bully people, which is fine, because, like, that's just not who Sheena is. But she's trying to bully Joe, where she's, like, at Hotel Ziggy, like, ah, take off your hat, I'm gonna bully you, take off your hat, show off your hair, ugh, what kind of hairdresser doesn't show off their work, show off your work, take off your hat. Whatever that attempt at bullying was, Sheena says it's because, you know, she still has this anger towards her for knowing about the affair and being complicit. Fine, same as Ariana. But I don't really think that's Sheena's real reason. I think Sheena feels like she needs to prove something now to Ariana and Katie because she has been, you know, running amok, basically, with Tom Sandoval and probably really upsetting Ariana in the process, and her friendship with Ariana and Katie probably isn't in the best place. And so I feel like she's just trying to actually be a mean girl because she thinks that that will get her back in the group. And this is typical Sheena behavior. We've seen Sheena do this for years to try to get back with Katie, Kristen, and Stassi. And now she's doing it with Ariana and Katie. And, you know, she's sort of taking Joe out in the process. I don't really think she has real actual beef with Joe. You know, Katie's comment, I mean, Joe seems really apparently affected by the crackhead comment. I do feel bad if Joe, you know, ran off crying, which she did, and if it was giving her anxiety. I think a lot of it probably had to do with filming. It was also a very weird setup that night at Hotel Ziggy because there were so many different groups of people. You had, like, Billie Lee, T, that singer. You had, like, Katie, Ariana, all those people. Then you had randos. It was just, like, a lot for somebody also who isn't used to filming. I'm sure it was just sort of a lot for her as well. What else do I want to say about Joe? I mean, I do feel bad for her. I don't think she deserves any sort of mean treatment on the internet whatsoever because she hasn't actually done anything to anybody. So I definitely feel that in that sense. But there was this one part at the end of Hotel Ziggy where Ali says to the girls, like, oh, you know, I wanted Joe to know that, like, you know, she's fine to hang out with us. Like, I want her to feel comfortable. And Katie's like, I don't want her to feel comfortable. I don't want her to hang out with us. And then she had overheard that, right? So is that mean girl behavior, isn't it? I don't know, right? I mean, it is, but this isn't really going to be her group of friends. You sort of can't force a group of friends to be around you. And, you know, there's certain people in that group who feel that they have reasons why they don't want to befriend you and don't want you around. And they're allowed to sort of make those choices, Ariana being one of them. But at the same time, again, I don't believe that Joe should be getting this sort of hate. What other themes did we see? Okay, so the whole Schwartz and Sheena of it all. Okay, so Schwartz, to clarify, so Schwartz tells Lala that he made out with Sheena 12 years ago in Vegas. He said he wasn't sure if he told Katie about it. He said that he and Katie were dating at the time, but they were in a rocky moment. And this whole thing during this episode seems to be this joke, this sort of funny thing where he's like, I don't know if this happened. Did it happen? And it's like, and his point was to sort of show we're all human. But dude, this isn't it. Like, dude, you cheated on your wife again, but this time with someone that she knows. And Lala is like, Sheena and I are close. Like, how did she not tell me this? And apparently, I'll have to go back and listen again, but I believe on Give Them Lala today, Lala did ask Sheena, you know, hey, didn't you, like, why didn't you tell me this? And Sheena's like, I did tell you. And apparently Lala just doesn't remember for some reason. But anyways, you know, he's sort of making it off as this joke, but again, like, it doesn't matter if he was in a rocky place. Sheena was engaged at the time. Like, this isn't cool. This isn't okay. And at the same time, it sort of feels like in this episode, there's like this weird flip where everyone seems to be mad at Sheena for this and not necessarily Schwartz. And the way that Sheena explained it to Katie when they were at Hotel Ziggy was that Schwartz, so they were in Vegas, it was like 12 years ago, and she was making out with Ariana for most of the time for some reason. And then Tom pulled her into the corner and kissed her, and she was like, whoa, no. So, you know, not like no in like a consent way, but like also sort of like she didn't want to kiss him. Like, this is when she was engaged to Shay. So she says that she decided, like, you know, I'm gonna take this to the grave because Katie and I are not in a good place. And the way she's explaining it to Katie is like, I love you guys and I wanted you guys to be good and I wanted you guys to be amazing and I did this for you. But here's the problem. Like, you didn't even give her the autonomy to decide whether to decide to be with a dude like that. And like, she has every right to not be with a dude like that. Like, I think this group is so used to the cheating and the incestuous nature of it that it's just like, Sheena actually thought she was doing a good thing by Katie being like, you know, no, I'm not going to tell her about this because they're going to be happy and they deserve to be together. And it's like, no, he cheated on her again. She should know about this. But then at the same time, I could also see where Sheena's coming from, where she's like, Katie hates me right now. And I could see Katie at the time either not believing Sheena or like really freaking out on Sheena and blaming Sheena for it. So I could see it going really badly for Sheena either way. But I find it odd that Sheena is getting the majority of the blame in this episode when it doesn't seem like it's something she initiated. Okay, what else do we have for the episode? My dog is really upset with podcasting. Guys, if you have any suggestions, how to keep your dogs busy, my dog, I wouldn't consider her, like, higher energy. She's medium energy, but even when I work from home, I really struggle with her because she's always looking for something to do. She doesn't sleep in the day, and she's not sleeping. It's evening now. She's not sleeping now. Any suggestions, I'd really appreciate it. Okay, I'm just, like, looking through the episode again. So Joe goes off crying, very, very sad. So Tom going up to Ariana and Lala and Katie at Hotel Ziggy was to die for. Oh, no, wait. So right before that, so why Katie's mostly upset about it is that she feels gross that Tom and Sheena were apparently, like, joking about it over the holidays, this alleged kiss or whatever, and Sheena explains it, like, no, I wasn't, like, joking, I may have made, like, a comment, something may have come out, like, oh, like, remember that time you, like, tried and I shot you down or something like that, and Katie feels most hurt that this is someone who was in her wedding and now she just feels like this is someone that she just can't trust. Okay, so then, yeah, so that scene, I just can't believe Tom had the, it's giving audacity, if we want to use the words of Katie Maloney, for Tom to walk up to Lala and Ariana and Katie at Hotel Ziggy, and he tries to talk to her about an email he sent her allegedly about, I don't know why I keep saying allegedly, sent her apparently about the house and the sale of the house. And she gives him eye contact for 1 second. It says, like, my lawyer has it. And then gives him, like, cheekbone side angle after that, like, sharpest cheekbone I've ever seen. And it was just the most awkward thing. And I actually laughed out loud. I was dying. But Lala tells the camera, it's taking Ariana a long time to get rid of the house. The brand deals are coming in. You can afford an apartment. And again, I just don't know why Lala keeps speaking on Ariana's finances, and it just keeps getting annoying because nobody really knows how much money Ariana has. She just explained a couple of episodes ago that she didn't have any money. But at the same time, like, I don't know, right? Like, it's just getting so ridiculous. But again, regardless, as I said in the news of the week, Ariana has bought an amazing house. Then we have a scene of James, Lala, Schwartz, and Sandoval going for drinks. This scene seems weird. Like, there's no explanation as to why this group of people would be together. Like, I don't feel like we ever saw something where Lala was like, hey, Sandoval, like, yeah, now we're cool, let's all hang out again. Like, the last we really saw them together was them, like, you know, making peace on the boat when they were in, like, Lake Tahoe. But, like, this is sort of odd. Tom talks about this guided meditation thing that he wants to do, and other ways that he handles anxiety and anger, and he invites Lala to come do breath work with him. He says it's less about reconnecting and more about wanting to build something new with her. She says that she doesn't know whether she can, like, participate in, like, something with him right now, but appreciates the invite and says she'll think about it. So Tom has this guy, Dr. Vu, come over, who's a lifestyle and performance specialist, and he's doing breath work with him, and it sounds like he's having this intense orgasm, and Lala comes in and basically watches this thing. It's like this scream. It's you'll have to watch for yourself. Okay, now my dog wants to go down. She does not like this. Does not like Vanderpump Rules. Okay. So basically she comes over after he's done and they talk, and she says, like, she didn't hear from him when her life went south, and she felt like whenever she had reached out to him, like, something like good luck with the bar, she didn't hear back from him. So He said, though, that he felt like there was always a disconnect between them, and she said that she wanted him to know that it wasn't just last year for her, like, it wasn't just the Ariana stuff. She says that she sees parallels with him, but also with every straight man that she comes into contact with. Because of what happened to her, it really fucked her up. She says that she feels a lot better now, just, like, having to talk with him, and... But then she says, like... And then he says, like, I want to become better friends with you. And now I'm sort of, like, confused, because that sort of feels like a betrayal to Ariana. Like, because she never had a friendship with this man. And now, after he does this to your friend, you want to, like, build one? Like, I get her, like, I even don't mind her coming over and watching him do this breath work and, like, even just airing out that final piece with him where she's like, I felt like you weren't there for me when the Randall stuff happened. I felt like you were never nice to me. I felt like whatever. Like, she still wanted to get that out, and that's totally fair. I get wanting peace, and I get not wanting to hold on to hate, but, like, building a friendship, I feel like, is a whole different thing. Like, I don't just know, I don't know how you're gonna come back from that with Ariana. Like, why do you need to build a whole new friendship with this man? You have other friends, you have other people in your life. It just seems very bizarre. And even for the show, I wouldn't even expect the show to expect that of her, because it just doesn't feel genuine. It doesn't feel organic. So I don't know what this is. Send me a message. Let me know what you guys think, because I am just, like, bizarred out by this one. Then we have Ariana and Katie talking about something about her, and it's being halted due to permit issues. As I've said, I believe, in, like, other episodes, I just don't want to get into the something about her of it all. I don't care about the news when it comes to the permit stuff and the this and that. Like, I'll go there when it opens, and I'll have a sandwich. I don't care how long it takes. I'm not upset about it. So then they set up for another tasting, and we have another tasting at something about her like we did last year. Schwartz is there. There's no explanation for why Schwartz is there, because he is not friends with Ariana and he is not friends with Katie, but all right. James says that Tom loves a sloppy Joe, and everybody laughs, and that is a pretty good joke that is now going to become several memes. He says that as the months turn into more months, so this is James, that there isn't much difference between something about her and Schwartz and Sandy's, and it's like, okay. But at the same time, like, everything that's going on with Schwartz and Sandy's, or sorry, everything that's going on with something about her is not the girl's fault. This is all due to permitting issues in the city and all of that, not, like, changing ideas like Schwartz and Sandy's were and running out of money and getting in fights with their business partners. That is very different, so it's not the same. Then they go to Sir, and Lala tells Ariana about the breath work that she did with Sandoval, that Sandoval did, and that she walked in for, and said that they actually had the most productive conversation. Now, this seems like the same sort of thing as Sheena, right? Like, Ariana is not your audience. You don't need to tell her that you had the most productive conversation with him. Like, she doesn't need to hear that. And then Ariana tells her about this horrifying thing that happened to poor Maya. So, as you guys might know, I love Maya Moon. That is Ariana's dog. I post about her a lot on Instagram. And she ended up having to have an endoscopy. So basically, Tom let Maya into Ariana's room, and she had takeout in there, and he closed the door, and Maya was in there and ate the whole thing, and it ended up costing $6,000 at the vet because he's so irresponsible. That's Ariana's version of the story. Katie ends up confronting him at Sir, in, or sorry, Schwartz at Sir, and about the whole makeout thing with Sheena, and, you know, she's sort of coming at him for it and being like, hey, like, what the hell, man, you know, you really, like, fumbled the ball, like, what the hell, and he's just sort of like, oh god, not again, and it's just sort of like, dude, she just found out, you know, like, give her a minute, and you haven't, like, really even apologized for it, because, like, again, and I should have put this sort of in the other part, he sort of made fun of the whole thing, so, you know, he's sort of acting as if Katie is being unreasonable and just sort of, like, not letting things go and trying to, like, bring up an issue and bring up a fight when that is not the case. Katie literally just found out. And then Brock tells Tom that last night Katie went home with Max Boyens. As you may recall, Max Boyens was from season 8. He was the general manager at TomTom. He ended up being fired from Vanderpump Rules after season 8 for racist tweets. And that's where we stand with Max Boyens. My understanding is that he was supposed to be on The Valley. I don't know if he's going to be in any episodes at all. I do believe he's in, like, a scene next week. But he apparently quit because he said it was boring. And he didn't want to film with them anymore. So that's interesting. So the Max and Katie of it all. So Brock said there's a lot of real double standards happening. So that is not true. This literally is not a double standard because Katie and Max are actually single. Tom Schwartz did not have a no one in the friend group rule. And Tom straight up cheated on Katie. So how is that a double standard? And the funniest part is that Tom does not seem upset at all. Everybody's very weirded out about the fact that Sheena had checked Max's location because she apparently has like 56 people's location on her phone and he was in Katie's building that night. And then she checked again in the morning and he was still there. And my question is, I want to know if Katie told Dana Kathan, right? Her partner on Disrespectfully, and Dana dated Max, right? So I would assume that she got the okay from Dana, but, you know, it was just interesting because I listened to Disrespectfully today and it was not addressed. So I just thought that that was interesting. Tom brought T. T is that singer that's friends with Billy, who they're bringing in as this produced person to go on dates with Tom. He brings her in to Sir. Ariana comes up to her and says, "How old are you?" And T says, 25. And Ariana says, "That makes sense." That was kind of rude, but okay. Ariana says that she probably got a very different story than the very real events and that you can do better than a 41-year-old narcissist. I was surprised that Ariana spoke to her at all. I'm just surprised that she decided to even interact with this girl because, again, it's like this one-off date and I just, like, obviously he's not going to end up dating this girl, but all right. And then Brock and Sheena end up getting in a fight for Brock telling Schwartz about Max and Katie because she said she was not going to tell Schwartz about that because she and Katie are in a good place. And then Brock and Katie end up getting in a fight about it being a double standard. And Lala is just like, "I don't recognize this version of Katie who just sort of follows through with revenge." And Lala said that everyone is just moving in this "ech" sort of way. So this is just sort of interesting because I think we're seeing a lot more as to the demise of Lala and Katie's friendship. It's just so wild because when we initially saw the Vanderpump Rules trailer, we thought it was about Lala befriending Tom Schwartz, but it's not. It's about, like, such deeper things, right? And, oh, and one thing I wanted to say earlier when it comes to, like, the news or just even any of this about Vanderpump Rules, when Scandoval happened, of the very few good things that came of it, one was that it brought all of the girls really, really close together, and now we can see how much it's torn them apart. Like, Sheena and Ariana, their friendship will never be the same, and that is because of Tom. Katie and Lala will never be the same, and that is because of Tom. Lala and Ariana, apparently, life-ending friendship after the reunion, because of Tom, right? So I don't know, but it seems like Lala is sort of what we're going to see from her through the rest of this episode is more of the demise of her friendship with Katie, but also she's questioning everybody else, like how she's saying that the way everyone's moving is confusing to her. She was upset about Sheena not telling her about the Schwartz thing, so she's now questioning the way she's moving too. So all of it to her is now just making her question everybody, which she is already so paranoid of anyways. We already know that about her because she questions everybody and everything and doesn't trust anyone or anything. And there's only so long you can live like that, so I could only see her just exploding for the rest of the season. And from what I can recall from interviews that she did prior to the season starting, she said that she cried the most this season that she's ever cried before. And that is the end of Vanderpump Rules.
I take sketch comedy very seriously, so it offends me when people just think that they can just do it.
Okay, let's get into the VPR after show. So Schwartz is told that Katie and Max had sex, and his response was just, "Max? Max? Max?" He said that Max reached out to him 5 days later, and he felt so uncomfortable, and they went and got lunch, and he apologized, and he blamed alcohol and proximity. And there's a little implication here that Katie was the provocateur, which is a word that Tom Schwartz has used before. I doubt it. He's saying Katie was on a mission. Katie says it wasn't on her bucket list and there was more flirting on his part, which makes a lot more sense to me. Sheena said that she and Max are good friends and have shared locations with each other for a couple of years. He checked her location that night and he joined her at Melrose Place. Then she felt a vibe between him and Katie. And that night, she asked if he made it home safe. And then she looked at his location. And it was in Katie's building. And then she checked in the morning and he was still there. Katie says that she knows that Sheena was snooping, wasn't actually worried to make sure that he got home safe. With regards to the kiss, Sheena said it was right after season 1. She said that she was actually making out with Ariana in Vegas. He basically, Schwartz said, come over to this corner, and he kissed her. Katie said that she should be more surprised, but she's not. The biggest thing was that it was kept from her for so long. Sheena said she felt like Katie hated her, and she was with Shay, and she's like, you know, we'll never speak of this. She said she didn't feel like this would go over in her favor, and it wasn't something that she had asked for. Tom said that she's acting like he came on to her hardcore, and if that were true, why would she joke about it in the last year? Sheena clarifies it wasn't in, like, a forceful way, but he didn't ask for her consent. Katie said it would have been nice to know in the last 10 years, and if she would have, she known, like, she actually would have broken up with him, because it's different than when he cheated on her with randoms. So that's actually so interesting, because, like, Sheena said, like, she just never wanted to hurt Katie, but it's so interesting that to Katie it actually would have been everything, right? It would have changed the trajectory of her entire relationship and her entire life, which is, you know, crazy. Katie said that she doesn't fully trust Sheena, and this confirms that. Sheena said that she didn't want this, and that she freaked about how Katie would react. Yeah, this is 100% Tom's fault. I think we need to put some blame here on Tom. So Sheena follows apparently 56 people's locations. So yeah, I would hate that. And like, I literally always lie about where I am because I love to cancel. Like, it's, I'm constantly canceling. I barely actually ever go to anything. So for people to know that I'm actually just at home when I've made up this gargantuan lie about where I am, that would be the worst. So, but yeah, I don't even know how this works. If you can just take yourself off, I think they were talking more about that, but then it like says who took them off. Sandoval says that only one person has his location and he wouldn't say who. Ariana said she doesn't communicate with Sandoval. She has a lawyer who will communicate with his. She said that him emailing her personally is not how to appropriately settle a house dispute. And it's almost like he doesn't understand the concept of send it to Daryl, right? Because that's literally what it was. You know, Raquel's lawyer emailed Lala's personal email directly instead of contacting her lawyer directly. So Ariana's just like, yeah, send it to Daryl and Daryl will respond. Lala should give him some merch for free. Ariana said that what Sandoval sent her was a letter of intent, and it was informal, and she wasn't sure what it was. She said there was no mention of the furniture in the home. He just made up a number because the house wasn't appraised. So she said, what exactly am I agreeing to here? Tom said that he doesn't want to deal with getting into the market and moving, and he said that Ariana is currently suing him. However, he's hoping to keep the house despite the court filing. He said the podcast is filmed there, and the band plays there, and he wants to make a bar there. They cut to James, who says that Tom told him that he wants to bring his kids up there in the backyard, and Sheena and Lala laugh about that. Lala said they are a tough crowd, and they were hard on, you know, on everyone regarding Joe. Lala said that Katie needs to disengage in the comments section because they aren't trolls. Sheena said that she was on one that day, and she thought it was a safe night for her to drink. Lala said that, however, you know, if someone tried to take off her hat, she would probably pop off as well, so she did understand that one. Sheena said that it was maybe her way of being like, I don't like you, but, you know, give you some unsolicited advice, like you're a hairstylist, why are you always wearing a hat? Sheena said that because she was complicit in the affair, meaning Joe, that's just what sort of made her treat Joe that way. Sheena said that Joe actually drove with Raquel to Big Bear to, like, hang out with Tom and Tom. Kristen said, because Kristen was in the after show as well, she said that the night the phone fell out of the pocket, so March 1st, 2023, Joe was there. You know, she sent a group text to Sandoval, Schwartz, Ariana, and Raquel saying, you know, this is so hard for me. I don't want to be friends with all of you. Kristen said that Joe was also texting Katie after she was divorced from Tom, asking Katie to cut Tom's hair, and said, like, you mean the world to me, and then she started sleeping with him. Kristen said that she feels bad for Joe, but only in the sense of Schwartz making it seem like he was her girlfriend, or she was his girlfriend, when he was actually sleeping with everyone else, including, and I guess this is news, that he was also sleeping with Lena, who's the girl who owns the hair salon. So with regards to Joe hyperventilating at Hotel Siggy, Katie said it was probably nothing, and she tends to get upset about nothing. Jack said those girls hype each other up, and he would be scared as well. Schwartz said that there was actually something deeper going on in Joe's personal life, and that was what the catalyst was of her being upset. Ariana said that she didn't know about the kiss between Schwartz and Sheena. Sheena said that in her relationship with Brock, he isn't cool with, you know, female on female kissing. When she met him, she was actually in a thing with a girl, and then her relationship was sort of started out that way, and then she had started dating Brock. She had to cut off that girl and she had hurt her. So I don't know, that was wild. I didn't have it on my bingo card. Like, this group never ceases to have secrets that Sheena was almost in a relationship with a girl prior to Brock. And then she said that she kissed Dana, and I think she means Dana Kathan, at Coachella last year, and Brock didn't like that, and he said no more. Lala was asked about Sandoval's breath work. She said it sounded like, and I quote, he was being fucked with a butcher's knife, end quote. She said she didn't feel like that was something she and Sandoval should be doing together. Sandoval said that he had started to value friendships a lot more when you go through things like he did. And he said that he and Lala were both defensive as people, but it was nice to take a step back and think more positively of someone. She said she just wants to be cordial and civilized with him, and they both said that that felt nice. Lala said that she pictures Sandoval having a, and I quote, needle dick, end quote. And Brittany said the same. That was a great LOL. And that was the end of the Vanderpump Rules after show.
This is why my show is successful.
This is actually not your show. It's actually my show.
Okay, guys, we're almost there. We're almost at the finish line. Let's get into the valley. So, Jax and Kristen go to dinner. Kristen is like, why are my guy friends saying, we don't trust your life decisions, Kristen? And Kristen explains that her ex, Alex, was her realtor, and they broke up 7 times until he kicked her out and sold her furniture that he wrote off. Jax says that he doesn't feel that Kristen and Luke are on the same page. He starts asking her about finances, and it's just a whole bunch of things sort of going off in a list. He says, like, Luke said he would never raise a kid here. Kristen says he is absolutely moving here. Then she says she got a new apartment, but he's not on the lease. And Jack says he's seen a lot of people like Luke come into Kristen's life, and then they need therapy afterwards. That is just so mean and uncalled for. Like, also, I get a different vibe from Kristen and Luke on their podcast, which feels like my first introduction to them as a couple, while this show may be it for, you know, the majority of people, because they do the podcast together, so I feel like, and they talk a lot about the relationship and their communication, and they really seem on the same page. They seem like they communicate very well, so maybe it's the edit, but it's sort of coming off like Kristen is in this ridiculous relationship that she hasn't thought through and is going to bring a kid into it, and this just doesn't seem like the case at all when I listen to their podcast, which feels more commensurate of their actual relationship than maybe the show, but I could be wrong. Kristen tells Jax that she wants everyone to treat Luke like he's a friend and bring him in. They talk about the Jesse Lally thing with Jesse, like, twisting Kristen's breast. And, like, I don't know, she's, like, not really upset about it. Then we have a scene of Michelle and Jesse taking Isabella to learn to ride a bike. They say they fought over their parenting styles for a long time. Michelle said that before having a child, she didn't know that Jesse didn't have any patience. And I feel like that's fascinating because they've been together for 8 years before having their child, right? So, like, how could nothing have ever come up in their relationship that would require patience? Like, they have a dog, but I don't know if they got their dog prior to their kid. He has a tattoo of a Pomeranian on his bicep, and the dog that they have isn't a Pomeranian, so I don't know if he had a Pomeranian at some point in his life, and if he did, I have learned that there is a lot of patience required when you have a dog, so I don't know, it's just sort of wild to not learn that about somebody until you're 8 years in. I think Michelle has such a kind, sweet approach, and Jesse's approach is sort of aggressive, like, almost in everything. It's the way he communicates with people, it's just, there's such a different vibe between the two of them. Like, she just has this very innocence about her, and he's just very, like, demanding. Jesse says that he may have changed or changed into something that she doesn't want. Michelle says that, like, no one tells you how to have a happy marriage and to keep that love and spark alive, and it's a scary thought. She says it's sad, you know, like, you know, just to sort of watch this go through, and it is. Like, I mean, you know, we know that they are now separated, as I've mentioned in the last podcast, I posted about this, you know, and I wish we had sort of known them as a couple longer so that we could be more invested and sort of watch them more on this journey. So then we have Kristen and Luke going for a jog. Kristen says that she can't get knocked up any day of the week, and she doesn't want to keep talking about it because she doesn't want to put that out into the universe. She's 40, she's 5 years past a geriatric pregnancy. She says that if any of her friends have any doubts, she doesn't care. And that's so true. Like, I never really thought about it that way. Like, not even just her friends bringing it up, but, like, yeah, I mean, you just don't want to put that negative energy out into the universe because it is going to be so hard for her to get pregnant, right? So to just have your friends questioning you and all that nagging on you, it's putting that negative energy out there, right? So it's not just a matter of, like, you guys trying to be, allegedly, good friends and trying to help her out and trying to be there for her, it actually could be preventing her from actually being able to get pregnant, and that's not cool. So then she tells Luke about the whole thing with Jesse twisting her nipple, and Luke gets really upset, and Kristen's like, it's so hot when you stick up for me. And I agree, like, that is the kind of guy that Kristen loves. Like, do you remember that one scene with Carter when Stassi and Beau got engaged, and even though, like, she and Carter were basically broken up and not in a good place, Carter texts Beau and says, like, you should thank Kristen for hooking up you and Stassi. That's a real friend there, and the way you've treated her. And she said that that made her swoon. And, like, yeah, not the right time, not the right moment, but, like, totally. So then we have the girls going to jujitsu. Nia says that she's a black belt. She said that when she was competing for Miss Universe, Donald Trump brought in a bunch of his creepy friends to watch them rehearse, and one of them grabbed her waist and she twisted his hand and told him she was a black belt. And I'm like, yes, I love this story, Nia. Like, you know, I said she was a bit boring, but, you know, she's warming up. She's getting a little bit more interesting. Oh, I also want to mention, I made a comment last week about how ridiculous it was when she was crying when Jax pulled down Danny's pants, and I just totally didn't get it. And what I didn't realize, because I am a person who is not a mom and never had kids, I did not realize the postpartum of it all, and I noticed a lot of other people talking about that, so that totally makes sense. So I totally apologize for making fun of her for crying for it. What else happens in this episode? So Michelle talks about wanting to go to therapy with Jesse and him not wanting to go, but they don't really delve into this more in this episode. So, you know, I hope we get a bit more meat from each couple here. Nia says that the guys should get to know Luke more because he's a quality man. We have a scene of Jason, Jesse, and Jax going to play hockey. Jax says that he hates that Jason is a lawyer because he always sees both sides of things. And Jax is just like, shut up. But, like, that's not a lawyer. That's just a person who can see both sides of things. And I think that's why everyone's trying to push Jason as the voice of reason. So they talk about Jesse twisting Kristen's nipple. And Jason says that he has sensitive nipples and he would not want that at all. And Jax says that he thinks that Luke is going to be a rebound guy because she started dating him days after she broke up with Alex. And, like, okay, but I believe at this point, Kristen and Luke, I think, have been together a year at that point. So it's kind of ridiculous that we're talking about him like he's Kristen's new boyfriend. So Jesse says that Jax knows that inviting Alex to guys' night will drive Kristen crazy, but Jax decides to do it anyway. So then we're at guys' night, and Luke goes to talk to Jesse because he's really upset about this situation between Kristen and him. And Jesse basically acts like he's not sure if it happened, and Luke is like, no, like, whether or not it happened is not debatable, right? Like, it's almost like Jesse is trying to put this twist on it instead of just saying, like, hey, man, yeah, sorry, I touched your girlfriend's nipple. Instead of just saying that, he's being like, did that happen? I'm not sure. You know, like, that's not the point. Like, he just wants an apology. And then he says as long as he apologizes to Kristen, they're good, and Jesse says that people do that. So then Jax ends up telling Luke that he invited Alex to, guys' night. And Luke freaks out. And, you know, he says maybe there could have been a world where they could laugh it off and they could be friends. And Jax says to the camera that Kristen has slept with pretty much everyone he knows, including himself. So if he can't hang out with anyone that she slept with, then he would have no friends. What the hell, Jax? Same to you. You are such a hypocrite. He seems to, like, have this deep down loathing resentment towards Kristen. Like, I don't really get what this is. And again, like I mentioned to you guys last week, I definitely thought his, Jax's sort of disdain towards Luke probably had something to do with the fact that Jax is actually friends with Alex. And, you know, this episode definitely proves that. But I could be wrong, but I don't think that Jax knew Alex prior to Kristen, so it's only a couple of years, and, like, you've had this 16-year friendship with Kristen, you side with Kristen, you go with Kristen, you don't invite her new boyfriend around her, or sorry, you don't invite her old boyfriend around her new boyfriend. Like, that is just so disrespectful and rude. So the girls and Zach have a girls' night at Michelle's, and Zach said that he would choose a girls' night as he is a platinum gay, which he says means that he has never been in or out of a vagina as he was from a C-section, which is hilarious. Nia talks to the girls about how upset she is that Jax pants Danny. Brittany tells Kristen that Jax had invited Alex to guys' night, and then she totally freaks out. And Brittany says that Jax had good intentions, which is that he just wanted everyone to be okay to hang out. again, like, this is just so bizarre. Like, why would that be okay? And then Kristen tells the camera that she started dating Alex when she was still in Vanderpump Rules, and then everything happened, and he, like, basically talked down to her and didn't treat her well and treated her like she was, like, a has-been reality star. Brittany argues that Jax has been friends with Alex a long time. Zach totally sticks up for Kristen and says that Alex should not be there, but Brittany says that he should be there because they're all friends and Luke is not. And Brittany argues that Kristen isn't there, but Kristen's like, yeah, but my boyfriend is. So then there's this scene of Jax and Alex talking, and this was just wild. So Jax is like, so weren't you paying her mortgage for a while? And Alex is like, well, I lent her a lot of money and I sold her house for free and she lived in my house for 6 months for free. Jax is like, oh yeah, she needs to tell people little details like this. And then he's like, yeah, you know, Luke is in that honeymoon phase, but it's just a matter of time until he becomes another casualty. Like, Jesus, Jax, like, you know, with friends like him, who needs enemies? Like, this is wild. Then we're back at the girls, and Brittany and Kristen are feuding, and Kristen is just like, Jax is doing this to be malicious, and Brittany's like, he's not, like, you're stirring shit up to be malicious, and Kristen is like, what am I stirring up? And then it goes cut to 5 minutes later, and then you have Zach screaming, I never said that! Then you have someone is telling Kristen to shut the fuck up, and it says to be continued. So I don't know what happened in that 5 minute span, but again, guys, I will say this again, the Valley is giving us everything that we have been missing with Vanderpump Rules. This is the drama. Brittany, Jax, and Kristen, and quite honestly, Zach, I'm quite loving him, are giving us this drama. I can't wait to see what happens next week. And that is it for the Valley.
He's a f***ing battered wife! Look at him!
Okay, the show was almost done, but here's just a little more tidbit of news for you before we go. Ariana Maddox has just been announced as the replacement for Sarah Hyland for the host of Love Island. So that is a huge, big congratulations to Ariana Maddox. That is a huge career goal for her. That is awesome. All right, well, that is the end of the show, the end of I Take Bravo Very Seriously. You can listen to this episode and other episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me on TikTok at The Bravo Investigator. You can follow me on Instagram at The Bravo Investigator and at I Take Bravo Very Seriously. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel at I Take Bravo Very Seriously. And if you enjoyed the show, if you wouldn't mind leaving me a 5-star rating, that would be amazing. And until next time, keep taking Bravo very seriously.